Let us begin in the name of the transcendent Father, the omnipresent Son, and the immanent indwelling Spirit. Amen. We'll begin with the time of Lectio Divina, listening to the Gospel for today's liturgy, the Gospel according to Matthew. We'll be reading the passage three times, listening with the ears of the heart, listening for how the Spirit is speaking to us in this teaching, either for our journey now or with a principle of the work. The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guest to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time, he sent other servants, saying, "Tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet, my calves and fattened cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast." Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then the king said to his servants, "The feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out, therefore, into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find." The servants went out into the streets and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, "My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?" But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, "Bind his hands and feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen." The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time he sent other servants, saying, "Tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet, My calves and fattened cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast. Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then the king said to his servants, "The feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out, therefore, into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find." The servants went out into the street and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there, not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, "My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?" But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, "Bind his hands and feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen." The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time he sent other servants, saying, "Tell those invited, 'Behold, I have prepared my banquet, my calves and fattened cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast.' Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then the king said to the servants, 'The feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out, therefore, into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find. The servants went out into the streets and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, "My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?" But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, "Bind his hands and feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen." This is the Gospel of the Lord. O God, when I found your words, I devoured them. I took them in and combined with them, and they became the happiness and the joy of my heart. Amen. Would anyone like to share what they heard? Anna, thank you.
This passage was very familiar to me. I never could get it. Something really hit me tonight. I guess I never could get it because there's such a reaction to the gnashing and the grinding of the teeth. It just seems awful. But this whole passage is my spiritual journey. I see the eyes that don't want to work. I see the eyes that do want to work, but doesn't want to prepare. So I'm bind often and led outside in the darkness, binded by the external world, by the external lures, where I suffer. And I can see it. It's such a beautiful transition. It's such a beautiful description of my entire spiritual journey. So my wish is to accept the invitation and come prepare, and not to be cast in outside in the external world.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Thank you. David?
I too, like Anna, had heard this passage many times and didn't get it. And the first time you read it tonight, it still didn't land. But the second time, a completely different impression came. I've always been looking at this passage from the perspective of an invitee. And what came on the second pass was, or the reading tonight, was how I am if I'm in the position of the king. This one has a tendency to do. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. I do. So here's this wonderful invitation I'm extending to you, and the calf is slaughtered, and come to my party, and nobody comes. And when they don't come, there's the rejection that the king feels, that this personality feels. And then I lose my ability to externally consider why they might not be taking my invitation. I just found that very interesting. I've never come from the perspective of being in the king's position. Mm-hmm. But that's a chief feature that I battle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Is that Gay?
I heard valuation of the work in here, the necessity for the valuation of the work, and the crowds that were finally invited in, or the many eyes in me that begin the work with such enthusiasm, and then the do, re, mi of the octave and the difficulty between the me and the fa intervals. If I don't come with the patience and the willingness to put my whole self in this, I never make it past that interval. Mm-hmm. And the darkness and the gnashing of teeth is where I end up.
Thank you. Pam.
I heard good and bad together, and was reminded that the space in between, which is the kingdom, it's the same, and I'm very comforted by that, and that pertains to our work lately, so it's good.
Thank you. Tracy.
The phrase, he was reduced to silence. And that reminds me of the idea behind when Mary got pregnant, let it be done to me. Something reduced him. Mm-hmm. And I heard surrender there. And I remember this passage from Lexio, and it's the same ideas. You know, who else was bound? Well, that was the good guy. It's okay to be bound. It's okay to be reduced to silence. Mm-hmm. It's okay to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I also heard the same passage. He was reduced to silence, and I felt that in myself, where there is less and less, sometimes really nothing that wants to say anything, that wants to defend or explain or judge or anything. There's just silence. And then the binding is coming under more laws. That's an example of really realizing I am under more laws. There's nothing to say. There's nothing to hold on to. And when I consent to those laws, of course there's going to be purification. It's part of what we say yes to, is that inner struggle. And notice the very first line, the kingdom of God is like, and everything that follows is in the kingdom. So the darkness, the gnashing, the ones who get kicked out, the ones who get murdered, the ones who do the murdering, it's all in the kingdom. There's no part of this where he says, and then there's the part that's outside of the kingdom. That's the good news. That's why we don't get to do the sorting and the sifting of what gets to stay and go on the journey. We actually don't know which few are chosen. And then, like you, David, at the third reading, I heard the king too, and I felt the burden of the king's role. And here and there, and then he has to come up with the next thing to say and do and order and organize, and all of that's in the kingdom. He's being a parent. Things are happening in the only way they can. It all fell apart, and now we scramble to put it together. It's still all in the kingdom. I always wonder why I don't read Lexio like this at home, and I timed us, and it was less than 15 minutes. Less than 15 minutes for that, just coming into the silence together and listening. And I too had never heard the things that were heard tonight. 15 minutes. Anything else? Any other inspiration? Yes. Lotus.
I heard feast. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to what I've been hearing everyone else talk about. And as well with the homework and everything, I've just been feeling more accepting of welcoming everything. And it's mm-hmm. about having your heart open. And even when I've had these days that were just, I was irritable because it was one tiny thing after another, they were all tiny. Mm-hmm. And I know I've been seeing and feeling how important those small things are, because I have friends that have much harder things to work through that I've been hearing.
Yes, a sense of scale.
Yes. So it's been, I want to say, kind of exciting to be delving more into the welcoming, no matter what it is, mm-hmm. whether it's something I'm hearing from a friend or my little tiny things.
Right.
So I say thank you.
Thank you. Leslie.
I loved what everyone shared. I heard as at the beginning the invitation, it's like the information from the center of the circle of conscious humanity is just flowing down all the time, but not many people can hear it or mm-hmm. and not many people accept it. Mm-hmm. And then going the one that, oh, but then they went out again and they brought in the good and the bad. So it's available. It's that mercy that's given and that grace that's given, whether we're good or bad or anyone is. Then with the wedding, not wearing the wedding outfit, I just saw that as someone said, just the honoring of the work or the valuing of the work. And then being cast out with hands and feet bound, I just saw that as being where it's very obvious that I cannot do. And I'm just out there in the dark, wailing and gnashing my teeth, but cannot do, and having to see that and feel it.
Anything else? Okay, thank you. Just a reminder, if you weren't here last week, we announced that it's time to sign up for second line groups. So if you've been in the work for a year and have a centering prayer practice and some other things I can't remember and are interested in some additional work with others and spiritual companioning on the way, please see the office and get a form to apply. I think you have at least one more week to apply for second line groups. Were they? Okay. There's the flyers are in the entry. Thank you. On the way here, I saw multiple rainbows. Did you?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? I never tire of seeing rainbows. I am still surprised like a child when I see them in the sky. And I felt like that was such a God wink for us tonight and the aim that we've been working with. And it would disappear, and then I would drive a little bit and turn and go in a different direction, and then another one would come, and it would be another surprise. And whatever I was doing, thinking, even praying, just ceased. And it was just that. And if that isn't self-remembering, if that isn't a sense of scale and dropping all the little concerns, I don't know what is. So if you didn't see it, imagine it now. Imagine this whole place just covered with a full rainbow on all sides. So our aim was to start each day with the affirmation that God is in all and all is in God. So let's feel that as we sit in this rainbow. And let's breathe it and sense it and know it and feel it. God is in all and all is in God. God is in the invitation in, and God is in the casting out. Amen. So with that context of starting our day, that was the backdrop for self-remembering, however that might look for you or not. Does anyone have anything they'd like to share? Rebecca.
Well, I loved this homework because my week was full of so many different experiences and responses to those experiences. And I find myself in a period of time where it is really easy for me to get identified with a particular part of my life. And then I had the experience of crying out for help. I had the experience of direct response, as I viewed it, from God to that, answering that request. It just seemed like a really full week, and I just loved being reminded, no matter what part of it I was in, that it was all God, and that it was all exactly what was needed at that time, whether I could see it or not.
Yes.
And I just have to say something about the rainbow, which is, on my way here, I made what was for me an emergency stop at HEB, and as I drove into the parking place, there was this small collection of HEB shoppers standing outside the store gazing up into the sky, and, you know, complete strangers, and, you know, I went, oh, rainbows, and they went, yeah. It was just like the shared experience of this fabulous,
that's wonderful,
you know.
What a wonderful image. What a wonderful image of collective self-remembering at HEB. That's so great. There it is. Thank you. Pam.
I have two experiences. One is, I have a grandson. I have four grandchildren, and I have one grandson who lives locally that doesn't speak to me often, and it has to endure it. And with the homework, I was able to stay in a position of just reporting into the dialogue that was going on in the head. Was Kai is sitting on the couch playing a video game. It wasn't, Kai is not talking to it. So the story got dropped because of the homework, and it changed 5 days of time with this child. And then the last day, I was sitting on the couch just doing what I was doing, and he was down there doing what he was doing. All of a sudden, I felt he was sitting next to me, and he was touching me. And I thought, wow, what's that? Now he's sitting on the couch touching me. And I could feel this little bubble of valuation of, it started to go to the place of I'm loved, the personality. And then it withdrew from that and decided to stay in its feet, because the overall aim that I have had is to start the day out and go as long as possible feeling my feet. And that's the other experience. And as you can tell by my talking right now, it's like trying to learn to drive a car. It's weird. So.
How wonderful to not even pick up that position. To not even pick up the self-reflection of and put it, overlay it on top of the moment. I am loved. I can drop that too. That's not needed. Thank you. Joe. Rebecca's got it.
I enjoyed this week's reading because it talked about how we, even though we would like to do the work, we don't do the work, and we mix our personalities, false personality, up with the work, and it's a bit of a mess on a regular basis. But I found myself this week, especially with this aim that we had at the with God is in all is in God. I was in a difficult week in my business, and I found myself just, instead of going with what feels natural to me, as it said in the reading, which is what usually feels natural is my false personality, but I found myself being reduced to silence quite a bit this week in difficult situations, and it really felt good to have that be what was natural for me this week, as opposed to my false personality being natural, if I can use that expression.
Yeah. So. Thank you. Wow. Okay, behind you, Joe.
This affirmation, I feel like it's at a different level. It's at a higher level on the ray, I suppose. And my week has been pretty ordinary. It hasn't been any better or worse than most weeks, but what I see sort of in retrospect right now is that all the minutiae that I get caught up in, I am at a different level than this affirmation is. So that when I remember the affirmation, it just sort of lifts me up out of the ordinariness of, and I realize now sitting here that it's always there and it's always available. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Tracy, did you have your hand?
So the aim was easy to remember, and I listened to talk radio on the way driving here and there, and you hear the same jingles for like Mattress Firm or Radiant Plumbing or whatever. And I thought, well, God's in this jingle somewhere. These annoying, nauseating jingles. And what came was the idea when you're at contemplative lunch, Barbara always says the 72 people who helped bring this meal and moment together. And I thought, well, I bet there's about 72 people making this jingle.
Yeah.
And I went immediately to families and kids and the dads who are the production engineers or the sound engineers or that sell the mattresses or whatever.
Yeah.
It just connected immediately. There's 72 people in everything, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then one more quick one, which caught me really off guard, because honestly, I wasn't the first thing I thought of when I got up in the morning. You know, sometime between sunrise and talking to my work partner, it would occur. But I was stepping out of the shower, and I thought in this moment, God is in everything in me stepping out of the shower right now.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Wasn't there before that? One there after that, but it was there as I stepped out of the shower.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
So your first example that you gave about the jingle is a great example of how A influences can be transformed into B influences. And suddenly, everything can be a B or a C influence because of how we see and where it lands. So you used it as a complete portal to just open up into oneness. You saw into families, you saw into teamwork together, you saw the flow of money and livelihood. It's wonderful. People having fun making them, being creative, whatever. A influences can be B and C influences for us. It's really up to us. It's not the influences. It's up to us. Did you have your hand up, Jackie? Over here.
I found myself asleep quite a bit this week until this morning, and I woke up feeling the critic coming back and thought, no, I don't want to be in this place. And I set a name to pray, to use every higher thought I could, and of course this verse that you gave us had come up, and I used it throughout the day, and I saw things soften around me. I saw the critic just completely disappear, which was a relief because it had been heavy all week. And then tonight when I came in here, I sat down and it was like a mantra: God is in all is in God. God is in all is in God. And I sat there a while with it, and all of a sudden I felt this smile come on my face, and my being just was lifted. So thank you.
Thank you. Greta, back here, Jackie.
I was on the Gulf on Sunday night, and a companion and I sat with our chairs on the beach to the sound of the waves and did a sit that went on for, we didn't know for how long. And it was beautiful because it was a feeling of as above, so below. The immensity of the night and the ocean and the infinite grains of sand and the immensity of the interior pleasure of sitting and opening to God and the unity of being in that endeavor with that other person really, really did point out God is in all and all is in God.
Right. Amen. Anna.
This homework taught me a lot about scales, as you mentioned earlier. For me, and I think what I visualize in horrific situations like 9/11, you see God in it. It's so easy to see it. But in the everyday little ordinary things, we don't often get triggered to see it. But when something so horrific happens, it just seems like we can see God in all.
Right. You know? Shock.
Yes. And I wish to see that God is in all and all is in God in the little ordinary things. And so this week was just extraordinary. Even today, even, I'm blessed with a job that I get to see people on life's edge. A father's crying because
He's lost his wife only less than a year ago, and he's on the verge of losing his daughter, his only daughter, who is my patient. And coming and seeing his tears, it's so easy to see God in that moment. And then going home later on this evening, and my son is tearful over a broken iPhone, and seeing his tears. In that one split second, I was able to see, oh, gosh, God is in this too. And just the whole scale of things.
Yes.
And it amazes me that we are pulled to that bigger thing.
Yeah.
And not so, we're so not impressed. And I think Bernadette once said, you know, our personality just likes to be drawn to extraordinary things. Mm-hmm. But really, God is in those very tiny little moments.
Right. Stepping out of the shower. Yeah. I was feeling that when Greta, with her beautiful voice, was describing the beach, and I could feel myself there, and I could see it, and I could feel this spaciousness. And then I thought, so let's describe sitting on Mopac. It's been an hour. I've listened to the same loop on NPR for the third time. And the infinitesimal nature of God in the moment, it's the same. But as you were saying, Anna, it's in the shock or the beauty we can see it. But can we see it getting out of the shower? A child who's upset over a phone. Same human tears, different source, but human tears. So it's good to practice with the big things. It's good to practice with beauty because it helps us remember and get an inner taste for that spaciousness and that expansiveness and the lightness and the availability and receptivity to what is, that feeling of flowing that happens. And then to be able to imagine with directed attention, attracted attention, that same kind of flowing sitting in traffic for an hour, where things aren't going my way. Can I still remain in this spaciousness, in this receptivity? Someone's opposing me. I'm in an argument. That spaciousness and receptivity is there too. So it's good to get that inner taste and then practice feeling into and imagining these other areas. Yes?
It kind of reminds me of the gospel reading about the wedding garment. So yeah. It's like you put it on or you don't put it on every minute.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Sherry.
So the aim served me in a different way. So Friday morning, first thing I woke up, there was the aim. Saturday morning, it was about 30 minutes after I woke up. Sunday, I was sitting in church before it came up in the reading. And that's when the critic and the shame come in. You can't even remember the A, right? You know. And then by, you know, Monday it was afternoon. Tuesday it was as I was doing my reflections. And then yesterday and today, I didn't remember at all. And so how it served was seeing the mechanicality in action, mm-hmm. You know. And when I remembered it the first time, it was in all three centers. And it, you know, waxed and then it weaned. And God's in the mechanicality too.
Yeah.
That was where the aim served me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, let's thank you. And the next commentary is kind of long, and there's a lot of really good things in it, and we'll just see what happens. Continuing on with the opposites. This was given on September 15th, 1943. We're on page 330. This is the opposites, part 5, focusing on third force. Tonight we speak of third force. As was said, the work teaches that there are three forces in all manifestations, in all events, in all created things, and they are called active, passive, and neutralizing, or first, second, and third forces. The concept of third force is not yet known to science in any distinct way, save that to the positively and negatively charged particles of the atom, there has been added the neutron. Science was primarily built upon the concept of two forces, that is, on action and reaction. This is in accordance with our usual way of thinking according to the formatory center, which cannot see third force. It cannot comprehend it, and so a new mind is necessary, a new way of thinking. Action and reaction we can all understand. Cause and effect we can see more or less. You knock a passive table and it resists you. Your toe is active and the table is passive and you get hurt. But the conception of third force is far more difficult to understand. Yet it is at work amongst us all, and it sometimes takes the form of what seems miracles, a synchronicity, or the same kinds of things happening together, which we call coincidences. So, for example, our experience tonight with the rainbow, we could call that third force, a synchronicity, a miracle. I had several synchronicities happen this week where the timing of things were just uncanny. Where one thing happened and then another and another all in the same day, and I could just see this sort of rush of energy moving and opening. But that was a day that, as Anna said, was more kind of spectacular. But what I wondered is, really isn't every day filled with that? With certain coincidences, people we see. What if every day we kept our eyes and ears so wide open that everyone we met, we wondered, another miracle. I wonder, what is this? But it really is the case. If God has a plan for each of us, then all of these pieces have been lined up. Now that plan has a scale that's so difficult to see. But everybody in our lives every day plays their part. They're part of that synchronicity. They're part of the little miracle of manifestation. And I experienced that this week. I want to call your attention to the word used by the work to designate this not seen and not acknowledged third force. Why is it called neutralizing force? Let us take this point first of all. The term obviously contains the idea of neuter. What does neuter mean? Neuter means, in the dictionary sense, simply neither. Of gender, neuter means neither male nor female. Of a verb, it means neither active nor passive, and so intransitive, that is, not passing into a definite object. In general, it means belonging to neither of two specified contraries or defined states. From neuter comes neutral. Neutral means politically to remain between two opposing parties. In chemistry, a neutral salt is neither acid nor alkaline. Militarily, to be neutral means to assist neither one side nor the other, and so to remain in a state of relative independence and freedom. In the sphere of electricity, it means having neither a positive nor a negative charge. In mechanics, it means a point where different forces are in equilibrium. Again, neutrality means, quote, the condition of being inclined neither way, the absence of extreme views, abstention from taking a one-sided viewpoint, etc. Now let us pass from neuter and neutrality to the verb neutralizing. To neutralize in the dictionary sense means to, quote, to render neither active nor passive, to counterbalance, to render ineffective by means of an opposite force, to produce equilibrium. The above dictionary definitions only partly give the real meaning in which the term neutralizing force is used in the work. This is not surprising because the terms and conceptions and ideas of this work are not to be found in any dictionary. At the same time, many work terms have reference to terms in ordinary usage. There is a correspondence. When the work calls third force the neutralizing force, it means that its nature is such that it is neither active nor passive and is quite distinct from them. So it is neuter in the dictionary meaning of the word, that is neither. But though neither, it is something. Also, when the dictionary says that to neutralize one can mean to counterbalance, to render ineffective by means of an opposite force, this is correct in a work sense, because sometimes the first effect of neutralizing force appears in an increase of either active or passive force so as to preserve an equilibrium. And honestly, I didn't remember that as a definition of third force, so that was something that actually caused me to ponder. That sometimes when we think third force is going to create something, it's actually going to create a balance for a while. So it tells me that sometimes when I think nothing is happening and that third force is absent, that actually patience is required to wait and listen, be alert and vigilant. But neutralizing or third force is a separate and distinct force originating from the first trinity or triad of forces, which create the first order of worlds at the note C in the ray of creation and give rise to all subsequent levels of creation by reduplication. In the first order of created worlds, three forces and no more act, and they reflect the will of the Absolute, but in three forms. In the second order of worlds, six forces, that is two triads, act. And so on until at the level of our far down earth, 48 forces, that is 16 triads, act, far removed from the will of the Absolute and so mechanical by comparison. For it is the interaction and crisscrossing of all these forces that produce both the complications and the mechanical limitations of our existence in this extremity of the universe. No freedom down here is possible, whatever social laws are made, because of these forces or laws. To speak of freedom is impossible. But a man in himself, by work on himself, can pass under fewer laws. In order that this may take place, the first thing he must do is to remember himself. In life, a man does not remember himself. It is from this point of view that I wish to speak to you about the third force tonight. The point where a man can begin to become more free lies between the opposites, in the region of the middle of the pendulum swing. And by the act of remembering himself, he begins to approach this place, psychologically speaking. It would be impossible to describe all the different ways of remembering oneself, even if one knew them. The emotional realization of our position on this minute, far down, insignificant planet, of the unimportance of our personal existences, can bring about some degree of self-remembering. So that's kind of like what Lotus was saying, to just be able to see just how small what occurs in my life on any given day really is. And that brings a sense of scale, which can take us into self-remembering. Sometimes merely looking externally at the heavens at night, at the myriad of stars, produces a momentary state akin to self-remembering by withdrawing us from personal feelings. Everything that takes force from personality may bring about a trace of self-remembering. But it is the recognition of the taste of the state that is important. For it is in this state and only in this state that health can reach us. And we talked earlier about the importance of that taste. The feeling of the work and all the background of esoteric teaching can bring about a state of self-remembering. And it is to the development of the mental and emotional evaluation of the work that the power of self-remembering eventually belongs, apart from the transient forms induced more or less by accident. The increasing feeling of the work is stronger than life, and all its ups and downs and swinging to and fro between the opposite brings about a state of self-remembering that is not due to chance, nor is merely a fleeting experience. But for a very long time, we mix the work with our associations, with the machine of personality, which is driven by life and reacts to it mechanically. And this is inevitable, because only a gradual separation is possible. A person cannot be torn suddenly away from personality. It would destroy him. So even though we try to work, we identify with the reactions of personality which seem more distinct and real, or more natural, as we say. At the same time, we may know well enough that we should remember ourselves and even want to do so, and are unable to do so. We are unable to because we are identified with the reactions of personality. We view through the incident, whatever it may be, through personality, that is, through all the attitudes, buffers, associations, pretenses, pictures, negative emotions, and so on. In short, through all the typical reactions that belong to our personally acquired personality. That is, we see it from the life point of view and not from the work point of view. In this, though, we are not forgetting the work and are even trying to work. Now, if we are identified with the reactions of our personality and at the same time try to remember ourselves, we find it impossible. To be identified and to be in a state of self-remembering is impossible. I don't know if it is. What I will say is there are absolutely times when everything is triggered, everything is on fire, and the energy is moving. And there's still enough non-identification to know that it's not I. Now, are there moments when you're totally in it? I can remember that. But there's a tipping point whereas he talks about where it's no longer life as the relating force, but the work is always there. Just this knowing, even if it's not conscious in the moment, is still infusing something. And one of the things that we learn is everything can be firing. So we can still have reactions, we still have the sensations, it still looks and feels and acts the same, but there can still be self-remembering at the same time. Yes? A microphone, please.
While you were talking about that, that's a description of my experience. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a way to go, but I know I've gone a long way. Mm-hmm. And so I was feeling and seeing that as you were talking, depending on where you were on the vertical scale. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're just a little bit higher than you were, but it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different. Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect
just
sense
to me.
Just
to know that I'm reacting makes it different.
Yes.
Just to know I'm identified makes it different. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. Thank you.
Just to know. Anybody want to comment on that? Or do you see it differently? Lori.
I don't see it differently. It is the knowing that, oh my God, I'm in the middle of a fire right now, which it seems almost immediately leads to jumping for the rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And asking for help.
Right.
So it's almost simultaneously now.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that instantly the fire stops.
Right.
But there's something miraculous about knowing to jump for the rope.
Yeah, exactly. Truly. Truly. David.
Today, this reading applies. Today was a very difficult day for me, and I, for me, that's not been the experience of having that knowledge. It was I was fully identified on several fronts, and they all kept feeding each other today, mm-hmm. all around the same chief feature thing that I wrestle with. But I mean, honestly, Pam, in that couple 3 hours I was involved in that. It was several different experiences with people, and I was fully in it. There was, mm-hmm. It was rabbit hole central.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, you know, Anna came home from work and we talked about it, and she brought some awareness to me that I was even able to see it. That just wasn't my experience. And I was actually going to bring it up as a question tonight. You know, what can you do in those circumstances? Because it seems like the work comes to me when it's minor irritations or other things around, things that just trigger me here and there, and I go, oh yeah, I can externally consider. But when it's these sort of main things that I wrestle with from a work perspective that come up occasionally and strangle me.
What do you mean by main things?
Well, I mean my issues around accountability.
Okay. So patterns.
Yeah.
These are patterns you've identified.
Yes. Yes. That are chief for me. That in that instance, I mean, you know, I always wish that the work comes to me when I'm in a place where I'm centered and I'm looking at my day. I wish for the work to rise up and come. But in those moments, how do you? Is there anything that people do?
Well, that moment is here right now. Mm-hmm. So take yourself out of linear time. That moment is here now, and you are self-remembering now. That moment isn't back there. It's right here. because you just brought it in here for all of us, and now it's in this container, and we're holding you in this container. We all are identified. We've all been there. We all know, just complete, but it's all here now. And you can see yourself, whatever you said, whatever you did, whatever you felt, the sensations in the body. And God is in all, and all is in God. And however we think of time in past, or whatever we're worrying about to come, the work has it covered. So you can always go, quote-unquote, back, which you did. I mean, you did it when Anna came home and you got some separation, and we're working with it now, and all of that energy is just dripping out. It's just flowing. It's changing. There's future memory. And then you do play it out in time. So we know it's coming again. I can see myself there. And I can see myself there. I am here in this, whatever it is. I don't even have to choose differently. I can just actually wake up and be there. Joe?
I liked your idea of sometimes it's just patience. Yep. And I know I was identified with some things today, and but I had the knowledge that I was coming tonight. Mm-hmm. And I had the knowledge that I was going to just bring this to this container.
Right.
And you just said it already, but I was thinking, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I knew that, okay, I'm identified, but I'm going to bring it to the container tonight, and I'm going to reverse time later.
Yeah.
And so that's just what happened. So even having that knowledge, when you're over identified, I mean, for David's sake, I'm saying, I know that at some place in his consciousness today, he knew that he was either going to get with Anna or get in this container.
Yeah.
And even that is better than not having anything. We just have the knowledge that we'll be here to reverse time and reverse consciousness, or however.
Well, it's evolving.
Yeah,
it's evolving it. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of other, there's many tools. We're just talking about one aspect. Rebecca.
Yeah, and I found myself this week in times where I was I was listening to you talk about being identified, and yet some part of you self-remembering, and there were times when I felt more like David, where I was just so identified, and I would find myself with an open book of commentaries and my welcoming prayer workbook and my journal, and I'm just like searching for what is the tool that is going to get me out of here? And it was help me now. I mean, when I can't, to me, it was like, okay, I can't remember any of the tools. I've tried them. I can't withdraw that feeling of I out of the identification like I want to. And I just have this clear memory of that one morning going, I give up. I cannot do. Right. Help me, God.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in the context of God is in all and all is in God, there's no failure. There's no failure. Tracy.
In the 12-step world, there's the 7-step prayer, and part of the 7-step prayer says, God, I'm willing, now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. And that I needed that in early life. And it reminds me of the work principle, if you can't help it, will it. When I feel myself starting to really move into something, I just go for it. No, really.
Yeah.
And but it's willing it. It's like, okay, you know, wail and gnash if you need to or whatever.
Pam.
It reminds me of listening earlier to Tim saying, well, that's just what one of these does. Yeah. I signed up for it. There it goes. It's one of these. I'm one of those. And it takes the personal aspect of it.
That's right.
We are innocent. We're in this situation. Mm-hmm. We're in these that do this. It's not who we are.
That's right. And this is how we learn. I mean, we think it's like we're making a mistake, there I go again, but that's how we learn. We're in school. Things are happening in the only way they can, which means this is how it needs to go for us. Just one other point that I'm going to skip down to before we close.